Blog Talk Radio.
Have you heard of passive aerobics? Now you can build muscle, burn fat, and enjoy the benefits of jogging a mile and a half in just 10 minutes. That's right, you can accomplish your fitness goals easier than you've ever dreamed. With the state-of-the-art Vibe Pro and Qi Pro fitness machines that are lightweight and small enough for any home or office, if you sit most of the day and want a great workout, or if you suffer from tight muscles from your exercise program, you will benefit from these body-balancing machines that the Hollywood stars use to feel and look great. For the best you, go to besthealthgallery.com. Best products, prices, and service, that's besthealthgallery.com. Or call 480-888-6548. 480-888-6548. Build muscle, burn fat, and enjoy the benefits of jogging a mile and a half in just 10 minutes. Call 480-888-6548. besthealthgallery.com.
Be a part of the next big technological breakthrough. Hi, I'm William Alec, President and CEO of Aurora Tech, a.k.a. Dr. Houdini on Vortex Network News. Free energy and anti-gravity technology now being developed at Aurora Tech will change the way we live and bring about a golden age for all mankind. Our motto, simply the most advanced technology on planet Earth. To get involved with great opportunities at Aurora Tech, please check out our website, auroratech.us. That's auroratech.us. auroratech.us. And call 480-474-4388. 480-474-4388. Simply the most advanced technology on planet Earth. auroratech.us.
Latest in conspiracies, cover-ups, suppressed technology, UFOs, and extraterrestrial contact. Vortex Network News with your hosts, Aurora Light and Dr. Houdini.
Hello, everybody. Live from the launching pad in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. You're listening to VNN Vortex Network News. I'm your host, Aurora Light. And here with me in the studio is my co-host and producer, the one and only Dr. Houdini.
And good evening, Aurora.
Now, Dr. Houdini, what a week we've had.
Oh, my God.
Why isn't it that we're not 25 anymore?
Right.
We got to rejuvenate ourselves back to our early 20s.
Well, we are working on that.
Yeah, we're working on it. People who have seen me can see a difference in the way I look.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't seen me for a year.
Yeah.
So I went to this one place in Balboa Island there on our way home, stopped in my favorite little boutique, the Amore.
Right.
The Amore, the wonderful Amore, where they make, not only do they design their clothes for their store, mm-hmm. they make them. And girls, I'm telling you now, go to the Amore boutique over there on Catalina Island. See if you can find that place on the internet, and I will tell you. You'll be impressed. So I went in there, and the girl said to me, "My God, yeah, I can see a difference. You look quite different than last year. You're rejuvenating." So I thought that was great. So, obviously, this nano water is helping me.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because it cleanses your body and it, flushes out toxins.
Mm-hmm.
So I really had a great response wherever I've been going where people haven't seen me for a little while. And I've lost some weight, too, which I wanted to lose.
Great.
Which is great. And I'd like to lose a little more. So I'll keep working on it for the next 6 months, see where it gets me.
Mm-hmm.
By just drinking the water. And, of course, I was bad last night on the way home from Orange County. I got some pizza. And you know me, and I'm allergic to a lot of cheese and flour. But I couldn't stop myself. It was like 9 o'clock at night, and I was 8:30 at night. I was starving. And we hadn't ate for a few hours, and I was like, get me a little personal pan pizza. And then you made me eat 3 slices because...
Made you?
Yeah, well, it was a little personal pan thing. I was going to only eat half, share it with you, but then you snuck in an ice cream.
Oh.
And so then I wound up eating 3/4 of it.
Uh-huh.
And that's all your fault. And I want everyone to know that.
Mm-hmm.
But we really had a great time.
Yes, we did.
We were up there in Monterey at a conference that was very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
The Starship Congress.
Right.
Now, we were expecting those people to be right on point.
Mm-hmm.
To understand everything about what we were going to show them and tell them.
Right.
But they were a couple miles behind, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, they weren't really up to the level I'm talking about until, we get there and we're like, we set it all up and everything, and then they make you move it.
Right.
To another location in the lobby. So that was double fun.
Well, the thing is, you know, they expected the conference to be in the other building. Okay, that's really made for conferences.
Well, here's what I think happened. I think that they got transferred into that building because maybe they didn't have the big numbers they were looking for. If you don't book the numbers for the rooms and for the food, when you put on a conference, and they will shift you to something more appropriate.
Really?
Yes. So I don't think it was the hotel's problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a group that books on and they're expecting 300 and then they only have 100 and they don't book all that food that they said they were going to book, you got to do something to cut your losses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happens. See, they relocate it lots of times to a smaller place in the hotel.
Great.
And so I think that might have been what happened.
Okay.
Because we were expecting more people.
Right.
And I would say there was about between 80 and 100 people there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but, you know, you only need that one that you connect with to make the difference. So we were expecting a lot more advanced information that would be, because the Extraordinary Technology Conference is so advanced.
Mm-hmm.
We were expecting people there to be very advanced, too.
Right.
And I think we were both in shock to find out they didn't even believe in UFOs, a lot of them.
Right.
I was like, what? I was sitting there having lunch with them the first day.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, I don't believe UFOs are real. And I'm like, what? Didn't you see that newspaper article from the 50s where they buzzed the White House? He goes, no. I go, well, you should study something. Find out a little bit about it before you put 2 thumbs down.
You know, they seem to be living in a vacuum.
I couldn't understand how really strange they were as far as engaging. I was trying to engage them in conversation, and we're on a more higher, serious level. And I don't know. I just couldn't do it. So I got frustrated and left it all to you to break the eggshell, you know, crack that eggshell. It was really a toughie because they were academia. They were totally, I think everyone who was there speaking and everything was following the party line to a high degree, wouldn't you say?
I would say so.
Yeah, because you heard them speaking.
Yes.
And you were kind of dismayed that they didn't know what you were talking about after when you try and engage them in between talks.
Well, here's the thing, you know, that there's a huge chasm between 21st century technology and 23rd century technology that you would find in Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
Now, every one of them are fans of Star Trek. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. But they can't seem to get over this hurdle of the technology from the 21st century to the 23rd. They just can't seem to breach that that or cross that chasm. Okay.
It's very. I thought it was very strange.
And even when I spoke with Miguel Okubre, who was the guest speaker there, I mean, he's like a pioneer in this field, right?
And outer space technology.
Well, in warp drive technology. And he really caused a firestorm back in the 1990s when he published his paper concerning the physics behind the warp drive engine. The problem with it, you know, that we have with academia today is that this whole notion of not only producing gravity, but also this concept of anti-gravity.
Right.
It is just so impossible to reach that goal from mainstream science, okay, to cross that chasm.
So anybody who tells them that they have is very suspect, I'm sure.
Well, the thing is that when I talked with Miguel and this other physicist presenter, his name was Richard, and I think he's from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Miguel that gave the paper there, and Richard gave another paper at, I think at some other conference or something, telling you that, before he presented, to produce negative energy require the entire positive energy that you have available in the known universe. I mean, that's how absurd physics has become.
You really have to repeat that theory one more time for me. Repeat what you just said.
Well, before Richard came along, it would take the entire positive energy you have in the known universe in order to produce negative energy. I mean, that's the absurdity, okay, behind all this. Now, Richard was able to come along just within the past year or two, and he presented a paper. Now, keep in mind, this is the thought.
Richard, can you say his last name?
I don't know. You're going to have to go to this Icarus Interstellar website.
Okay.
And then go down to the presenters at this website. Here we go. Looking for this fellow by the name of Richard.
Because I don't know the pliers like you do. So
right.
All right. So the point being about this guy.
Well, the point is, Richard Obasi, I think his name is. He claims to be a warp drive physicist. Now he managed to get that energy requirement from all the positive energy that you have in the universe down to the energy that you would have in a planet the size of Jupiter, all right, in order to create this negative energy required to implement. Yeah, absolutely. This is coming from mainstream science.
This is theory.
Right. Let's yeah, exactly. Theory.
This is not application.
Right.
Okay,
so he managed to reduce it down to a planet the size of Jupiter to produce negative energy.
With his numbers.
Right, yeah, with his numbers. Okay, so you have one absurd concept of the known universe down to the size of a planet, which is another absurd concept.
Of course.
Now, the solution... To me, the solution to this whole starship implementation, it's not going to come from the mainstream scientist. It's not going to come from there. It's going to come from the alternative researchers.
Well, you.
Okay.
Basically, I think.
Yeah. For example, me, the Tesla Tech Group.
Right.
Okay. That's where the solution's going to come from.
Because they have no vested interest in continuing the theories that have prevailed.
Mm-hmm.
When you are in academia and you've been, you know, drumming this into everybody's heads, in your own head, it's been drummed into for decades, I think it's kind of hard to say, let it go. And let's see what we have next.
Right. Right. So, you know, I personally talk with Miguel Gubri there, you know, at the conference. And I ran all this by him. And I was literally shocked when I spoke with him. Literally shocked from it. And that is from his perspective, which I thought would be much more open, okay, than what mainstream science and their position, you know, on this warp drive technology would be at. And his perspective was literally from a point of view of disproving it rather than proving all his concepts, okay, behind the warp drive engine. And I was just shocked from that position.
I remember you after your talk with him saying to me, you know, they're spending all this time trying to disprove what I'm trying to roll out. You're trying to roll it out, and they're trying to roll it back.
Yeah. And it's like, what the hell? You know, how are you going to move forward with the Starship, okay, and yet have no steering wheel to take you in that direction, right? So how are you going to do that? And their only perspective is what they have today, you know, in rocketry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're going to strap on a rocket on all this incredible stuff,
mm-hmm.
okay, that they're developing,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to take you to the next star. I mean, I seriously doubt that.
Right.
You know, and just reading some of these reports, who was at this physicist by the name of Hawkins, right, out of England, and some rich billionaire from Russia have teamed up, and they want to send a whole bunch of spaceships, okay, to our nearest star. And they want to use...
Well, you don't want to send them to a star. You want to send them to a planet.
No, they're sending it to a star.
To burn up?
To our nearest star.
To
you know,
burn
what is
up
that?
What?
Alpha Centauri,
are they gonna
which is only about
four and a half light years
away.
Are they just going to do a flyby or are they going to ram it?
Aurora, this shows you how absurd this idea is.
Okay. Well, keep rolling because with it. I tried to talk to these people for an hour and a half at lunchtime, and really, it was pretty much like talking to zombies.
Right. I mean, they want to build a starship, right? I mean, that is the theme.
It was the zombie apocalypse.
Of their Icarus Interstellar group. They want to build a starship. And, of course, they all watch Star Trek, you know, as I mentioned earlier. But yet they just can't seem to cross this chasm of implementing an actual warp drive engine, which requires basically two things to be harnessed. Number one, you have to harness gravity, and you have to harness anti-gravity, okay? Because the both of them work together to produce a warp drive engine. Now, when you have McGill and the mainstream scientists on one side of the picture here, they were basically trying to prove a negative, which, of course, is impossible to do. You can't prove a negative. You can only prove that warp drive theory and implementation works. But you see, their position is to disprove anything that comes along today, okay, to move you in that direction, to
you
prove that it is so.
If they're mind control projects that were showing up there.
Well, yeah.
Because I literally... You know, I have it down to a science to be able to engage people,
mm-hmm.
because I've done years of conferences, many years of conferences.
Mm-hmm.
So I know how to, you know, click with people in a fast way, an easy way usually. I can usually make inroads. Well, with that doesn't work. It's not TV. So with they're in that group, I felt like a huge wall. Now, I have been with academic types in the past, and they were much more open and friendly and responsive. So I can't blame it all on that, you know. And then there was some evidence of mind control going on there, I thought, as far as the people
mm-hmm.
goes. Now, I don't know if they're just programmed like most of our society is. Most of our society is programmed to disregard a lot of things.
Right.
Okay, they're programmed to, now don't look over here, look over here.
Mm-hmm.
Look over here. You know, that's kind of the programming that's in place. And I felt when I was trying to open them up a little bit to what I had to say, that there was just a gigantic wall.
Mm-hmm.
Though I couldn't even chip a window in. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to let Bill take this one. Mm-hmm. Dr. Houdini, this is one for you. And I said to you, well, just keep hanging out with them for the week and see if you can, they'll finally accept you as one of them. Because that when you're an outsider and you're trying to present new ideas,
mm-hmm.
it's so difficult sometimes.
Right.
So, you know, I said maybe after they get to know you for the week and they relax around you, they'll let you into their parlor to play cards with them, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Which happened at the very end as I was packing up the display. I think the openness happened right there at the very end. Now,
why people came up to you and started engaging you?
Yeah. See, after the Miguel incident occurred, okay, he represents mainstream science, the position that mainstream science.
Say his name again for all of us.
Miguel Alcubierre.
Oh, Alcubierre?
Yeah, they regard him as the father of the warp drive engine.
Okay.
Okay. At least from the physics point of view. Okay. At least from the physics point of view.
Okay.
He would be considered the father of the warp drive engine. Okay. And his theoretical view shows you what's required and shows up in the physics, mainly in general relativity. Okay. And he goes into a lot of detail about how to do that. All right. So his perspective is that, oh, no, you can't do any of that today. Okay. So he completely throws out, you know, the alternative energy, all the alternative energy researchers, the research, you know, all that data. No, no good.
No,
just from their point of view. Okay, this is what we're doing today.
I mean, officially, not one university will acknowledge that that's going on.
Right, okay. Which means to us, the door's wide open.
Exactly,
okay?
It's perfect.
The opportunity here,
it's great.
Folks, is incredible.
It's huge.
Okay.
We were just blown away.
It is absolutely huge.
I mean, we're just miles behind. They're miles behind us.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so what Miguel's position is that mainstream science, their position is to disprove rather than prove. And when, of course, you try to prove a negative in that case, their task is virtually impossible.
They're wasting their time.
Right. They're just sitting there. You know, this group is literally sitting there with the wheels spinning, burning rubber, and going nowhere.
That's what I thought after an hour and a half.
And there was even a venture capitalist that showed up for this conference, probably from Silicon Valley. All right. complaining to this group that, look, there's nothing to fund here.
There's nothing to invest in here.
There's, you know, I want to see something to invest in, and there's nothing to invest in where he can get a return on his investment. All right. That was his biggest complaint. His biggest complaint at this conference. So, okay, you know, I get that. And I think Aurora Tech, you know, can bridge that gap.
I think he's looking for at that conference.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
You should have told him that. Well, we're what you're looking for.
I gave him all our info.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so.
He'll know.
Yeah.
Once he does a little
research.
And
I explained, you know, all the laboratory experiments that shows that, yes, we can produce negative energy right there in a lab.
Well, that's what's important.
You don't need a planet coming from mainstream science to be able to produce negative energy. I mean, the absurdity behind that.
Yes.
Okay. So we can bridge that gap with venture capitalists. And we know we can do that. Now, the mainstream science hurdle here, and I talked to Glenn about this. Okay. Glenn was a presenter at this conference. And I told him, Glenn Robertson.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a presenter at this conference. And he's also a researcher. And he presented a paper at Tom Vallone's group at the coffee conference just a few weeks ago. And he's the one who turned me on to this group. Okay. And then I talked to Aurora and I said, yeah, we better go to this. Okay. So anyway, we had one of these bathroom discussions about this, where you go to the John, do your business, and then standing right next to Glenn here, I said, you know, Glenn, I talked to Miguel Cubre, you know, about all this, and I was literally shocked on his position that, you know, mainstream science has taken, you know, with this technology. And he says, yeah, he's completely, you know, in line with what I'm talking about here. And he says that, well, you know, the mainstream physicist, their position is that they only know what they know, you know, from a very limited, you know, they have like blinders on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so anything outside those blinders, okay, they're going to meet with a lot of resistance,
mm-hmm.
you know, until there's like a formalism behind that, okay, that's can be digested, okay, by the mainstream science.
Look, they're not going to approve it until it's rubber stamped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so that was kind of the position that Glenn was taking.
Yeah.
That he completely understood Miguel's position that, you know, before he became a physicist, yeah, he was doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he became a physicist, they kind of knocked that out of him.
Right.
Okay. You know, no, you're not going to say that's possible. Your position's going to be that it is impossible.
You never know. He might have sat in the Montauk chair. They might have taken him to the Montauk chair, given him his V8 injections, you know, and then rearranged his molecules so that he came out to be what they were interested in promoting. And then they said, look, now we're going to promote you because you've done the right thing.
Well,
that's
the Montauk
what they tell
chair.
All these guys, you know, like Jim Delatoso, mm-hmm. for example, took Jim to the Montauk chair. Okay, after Jim gave me the contact from the Pallades video, Billy Myers, and his extraterrestrial experiences with human appearing ETs. I should have been selling that video there because these people were clueless.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, absolutely.
And wish I would have had that video there for them. And then they stole my books. Where did they go? The bookstore at Yale and steal the books? I don't think so. I mean, that was pretty rude.
If they could, they would.
If they could, they would, right. Yeah, so anyway, Jim Delatoso, for example, when he gave me that contact from the Pallades
mm-hmm.
video, he was then put in the Montauk chair, literally abducted by him, sent to Mom Talk.
Mm-hmm.
He was gone almost a year. We were all wondering where he was. Nobody was talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't find out any information of where he was until he got back. I said, what happened to you? I said, you don't look the same. What happened? Where have you been? And he said, oh, they almost killed me.
Mm.
I said, what do you mean? He says, oh, they had me. They had me, he said, all this time. They were rearranging my molecules. So I wouldn't be a problem anymore.
Ah.
I said, really? So that's the end of the limos and the cocaine and the women and the fun and the games and all that left when his molecules were rearranged by them. And he was left to be kind of like half the person he used to be. You know, he just wasn't as peppy anymore. So I think that that's what happened to these guys. I think that they were, you know, they're not the high level players, all of them, like Jim Delatosa was, you know, with the brilliant IQ, you know, the 200 IQ. But, you know, these guys were trying to play, be players, the Couvreur guy and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, they were opening up some doors and they didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what they did is they reined them in like they did with Delatosa. And, you know, they'll say, you know, because people do it for financial reasons. They're told, promised, you know, they're promised support.
Mm-hmm.
So they get the support behind them and they can do whatever they think they want to do. But really, their whole vision has been destroyed. They don't have their original vision anymore, usually. They go off on another avenue.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's what sounds like it happened to him, that he didn't open the door for the rest of it to come through. He was blocked. And he was, like said, he was corralled and he was directed. And now he doesn't have that go for it attitude that he used to have.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I've seen him do with mind control projects.
But it sure didn't keep him from showing up, you know, at this conference. So.
But the conference can be put on sometimes with, you know, approvals. Stamp approvals. There was nothing going on there as much as you wanted to. I mean, you were expecting much more camaraderie.
Yes, absolutely. I was expecting more of this forward-thinking, you know, advanced
like
thought.
A frat house, you know, where you were all members on the same team.
Yeah. So instead, you know, I get this wall. Okay, put up.
Yeah, but you persevered.
Yes, I did.
Because
I persevered, folks.
And
to the very end.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you got to do.
Okay, and then with the test of life, metaphysics. Timing, energy, savoir-faire, and tenacity. And you hung in there with the tenacity?
I did do that.
And that was the test for you?
Mm-hmm.
That's the test of life, timing, energy, savoir-faire, and tenacity.
So the question is, what did I do?
Yeah.
Okay. At the very end.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm packing up our display, our incredible Aurora Tech display.
Which was gorgeous, by the way.
Yes. I worked with what we had.
Yes.
It was a challenge, folks.
Because you had a very narrow area there to work with. You couldn't.
Right.
Build out a booth like normal.
We didn't have a nice conference area where you have a lot of room for people to mingle and schmooze and
well,
get
you
to
did
know.
In that talking room. In the lecture room was nice and big
and
airy and everything, but they wouldn't let you set up in there.
But I strategically placed the booth, okay, between the you know, the front door
and
the washroom and the restroom.
And the restroom's in the conference room.
Yeah.
They had to go by it.
Exactly. They had to go by our booth. And, of course, we have such an incredible display. They had to look.
And, of course, they had to steal my books, too.
Yeah.
Right, there you go. This looks like a great display. Let me take this book.
Right. And, of course, I had our posters up explaining pretty much what I presented, you know, at Tom Vallone's Coffee Group on developing practical warp drive engine technology.
Did any of them stop and read the posters?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I saw people taking pictures of them.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, that's flattering.
Right. And, of course, you know, Tom Vallone did a lot of great research, you know, in this type of technology. And Tom Vallone, you know, he wrote a couple of great books, you know, on electrogravitics and how it ties into using the electric force, okay, to produce a warp drive-like engine, okay? He uses different terminology, but it's basically the same type of effect. He does go through a lot of the math behind that and did a very good job presenting that in his two books. Now, I took that and put that into a picture, into a big poster, okay, so that people can take a look at it. And to be specific about, you know, Tom got into the Byfield-Brown effect. Now, the Byfield-Brown effect, you can look up all this stuff. It's all on the internet, folks. The Byfield-Brown effect was, of course, discovered back in the 1920s. And this researcher by the name of, I think his last name was Byfield, he was building a lot of saucer-shaped craft, okay, even back in the 1920s. And he used very high-voltage electric fields produced by high-voltage generators, of course. And he noticed that there was a levitation effect. Now, of course, the mainstreamers of today, mainstream science, wants to dismiss that, okay, as just as a ionic wind effect, that the high voltage would strip off the electrons, you create these this ionic wind, and that's what was levitating your craft. But see, there's much more to it than that. And of course, Byfield and Brown back then went into a lot of detail behind that. One guy says that DARPA, okay, the military, tested some of this, found no effect there with Byfield Brown. They want to dismiss it as just ionic wind. And of course, you know, how they implemented their testing was, of course, all wrong. This technology was tested in a vacuum. Okay. I want to mention that to everyone that, yes, it was tested in a vacuum, which, of course, it's going to be completely absent of any sort of ionic wind. And, of course, you had a levitation taking place. Okay. Now, of course, the main guy behind this is Tom Vallone, okay, and his books. So that was one effect that I presented.
Where is Tom Vallone nowadays?
He's out east.
I
you know, he just retired.
Extraordinary technology.
He was there two weeks ago.
Was he? I didn't see him.
Yeah. Yeah. He was.
I don't think I know. I would recognize him. I don't know what he looks like.
Oh. Well, I'm going to have to introduce you to him.
Apparently you are. We should have had dinner with him every day.
So anyway, Tom Vallone is an expert with the Byfield-Brown effect.
Yeah.
So I corrected this gentleman at the conference here, just last week here, about how they didn't do the test correctly, you know, with DARPA.
Okay.
Okay, so sent him Tom Vallone's information. So that was one poster implementing a practical warp drive technology. The other one that I put up there was the Nasikas thruster. And you can also look this up on the internet. The guy who's behind that is Dr. Paul LaViolette. And he recently wrote an article and published it in Steve's magazine, you know, Extraordinary Technology Magazine, on the Nasikas thruster.
Everybody out there, you should order this magazine, you know, really,
right,
to keep in touch with what's going on. It's really like the only group that's really out there kicking it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a great form, you know,
Steve
for the alternative.
Everybody the freedom to do their thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's a great forum for presenting alternative ideas from researchers who may not have the backing, you know, of mainstream, from the mainstream community. Now, from our point of view, Aurora Tech, you know, I see an incredible opportunity here that we can lead the parade. And that's what I presented to Andre.
Not only we're going to have to lead it, we're going to have to create it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not only leading the parade here, but we're also creating
the movement.
The movement. Correct.
With Steve Elswick and others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but everybody's waiting for whoever can get to the finish line first to do so.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this presents an incredible opportunity for
yes,
us.
Yes, it's amazing.
Because the door's wide open. And we have an opportunity here to really take the lead.
We do.
And not only take the lead, but create the lead.
Create the party. Really, it's you got to host it, and then you got to invite the attendees.
Yes, and I know Aurora here has incredible amount of experience in this because she led the parade, you know, 30 years ago
on the UFO,
back in the 1980s
on the UFO
with the UFO movement.
Yeah, UFOs and human appearing ETs. Mm. Nobody was talking about human appearing ETs.
No,
nobody.
I mean, he had all these fragmented videos mm-hmm. Back in the 70s, but
well,
nobody really
yeah.
came along until you came along, you and Michael.
Well, here's what happened, is that I had my experiences with human appearing ETs who were spiritual, evolved, advanced ETs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, okay, am I the only one? So I started telling Michael about my experiences when I met him, and he was giving a lecture at ASU that my girlfriend invited me to. So I went, I didn't even want to go that day. I'd just gotten fired 2 days before from my job at this resort hotel, a golf course, as their assistant manager. And I was didn't even know why I was being fired, and they wouldn't even tell me. And I thought, oh, this just sucks. I'm so bad off. And here I was, and I'm feeling sorry for myself. When my girlfriend hands me the invitation, my girlfriend from Detroit, Charla, who was a metaphysical, spiritual person herself, hands me this flyer and says, why don't you go to this thing? I think you'll make some connections like that. Well, I go to it and I meet Michael Alajon.
Wow.
So I didn't want to go. I was in a bad mood because of being fired. But I said, okay, Charla's going to meet me there. And she'll be standing there at the front door waiting and waiting and waiting. I got to go. I couldn't try calling her, and I couldn't get a hold of her. I said, okay, I got to go. So I'm standing there waiting for her, and she didn't show up. So I thought, whatever, I'm here. Now I'm going in. So I go in. First thing I see is this bright golden white auric field on Michael Alajon. And I'm like, wow, who is this dude, man? He's a master. And so I sat down in the center of the auditorium there, and I was, he had a pretty good crowd, a couple hundred people. And I sat there in the center of the crowd and lit up my aura real bright to see if he could see it. And it proved to be distracting. So I went up to him after during the break during his lecture, intermission, and I said to him, okay, I've got just about all these star people characteristics here. So what do I do? Join a star people country club or what? And he just started laughing. He said, I want to see you after the lecture. And I said, really? Where? And he says, backstage right there. I want to see you after the lecture. I said, oh, okay. So I'm standing there, and there's this other girl standing there. And I said, who are you waiting for? Like I didn't know, right? But and she said, Michael, I hear he's looking for his other half, and I think I'm it. And I said, oh, okay, well, good luck with that. Did he ask you to come here backstage? She said, no. And I said, well, guess what? He asked me to. And that just took the wind out of her sail a little bit. And then he came off the stage and he asked me to go out to dinner with him. And then that was it. I couldn't get rid of him for about three decades.
There you go. So you led the parade.
We created it.
You created the parade.
Yeah, there was nothing going on when we got into it in the UFO field. There was nothing about the advanced ETs who were part of the spiritual hierarchy very much, except for George Adamski, really.
Mm-hmm.
Adamski was pretty much a one-man band. He wasn't really accompanied by a lot of other people at all on that journey.
Mm-hmm.
About the human appearing ETs and the advancement of them, how incredibly advanced they truly are. And so my experiences validated that awareness for me, my personal experiences. And along with that, Michael's experiences filled in a lot of gaps for me. So I wrote a book with Michael that you helped us publish, actually. Dr. Houdini published it for us, which was Prepare for the Landings, where we really spell it all out and we lay it all out for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't read that book yet, please do so. So, yeah, my next assignment was, you know, to get this world, this technology out. And I know what it's like to create a movement because I created that whole human appearing ET movement. Okay, by rallying the troops. The IM Foundation was out there. They were from the 1940s. The George Adamski was from the 50s. There wasn't really that much. There was another George out of New Mexico. I'm trying to think of his last name, who was in the UFO field, who talked about human appearing ETs too, but really not many people.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly nobody young, good-looking like we were when we were cranking it, you know, starting out. I got into the field at 28 years old, and I was rocking it big time. Covers of magazines, newspapers. You'll see it all on our website. Some of, excuse me, not all of it, but some of it under UFO West.
Okay, well, that's an interesting story, Aurora.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Houdini.
And now you're repeating yourself here, spearleading this amazing technology.
I feel that was like almost a warm-up for what I'm doing now.
Right.
Okay, that this is even much, I mean, that's huge, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
Connecting people to the realities of who we are and what we're doing here, it's huge.
Right.
But more than that, and I suggest to everybody who's listening, if you haven't read my book yet, Prepare for the Landings, you'll find it on our website, vortexnetworknews.com. Vortexnetworknews.com. Please go there, study it carefully, because I've got everything up there to strengthen you on your earthly mission, which I do through personal consultations and with the incredible lineup of products I've assembled for New Agers. And to add to it, now we have the Vitality Pad and we have the Nano Water System and we have the Fast Grow technology. So I'm rolling that out now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start rolling that out. Hopefully after the holidays at the end of the month, people will be back in their chair and ready to make some money again. And
well, the kids will be back in school.
Well, everything will be going on, you know,
yeah,
as normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to do business sometimes between June and September, unless you're in the resort business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everybody is on vacation, and especially the multimillionaires who own these companies that I want to talk to. So I'm going to be talking to the top 100 vitamin and health companies in the United States.
And then I'm working on the free energy transformers.
You're going to finish that up.
Yes.
So That'll be fun. I mean, we're going to do the CES show in January. We got to get that going too.
We're going to be rolling out all the products, including the Go Power systems.
I think we should try and make some connections with the venture capitalists this fall too, before the CES show. You know, make it our goal.
Definitely.
To have a few appointments every week to talk to people and see if there's anybody who gets us.
Right. Okay, now, what I want to do is wrap up, you know, this thing with Icarus Interstellar.
Oh, okay.
Okay, what actually happened there at the very end. Okay, as I'm packing up, right?
All right.
You know, as I'm rolling my stuff out, you know, I pass Andre. No, Andre's the president of the this Icarus Interstellar
Thanks
group.
For introducing me.
And the previous president was a fellow by the name of Mike. Let me find his.
Now, what is Andreas? What is he associated with outside of the conference?
I'm not really sure. You have to look that up.
Okay.
Okay, but the main players there was, of course, Andre and Mike Mongo. And Mike is a astronaut teacher and author. And Andre is the president of Icarus Interstellar. So as I'm walking by, there's Andre coming up right side there. And I turned to him. I stopped him, turned to him, and said, Andre, I am going to give you anti-gravity and warp drive technology, because that's what's going to make all this happen. Without it, well, good luck, right? But nevertheless, my promise is to deliver gravity and warp drive technology.
And what did he say?
And with the funding that's available, okay, that I'm funded for this operation and to give you this technology. So to make the Starship happen, you need this technology. Okay. And that, I think, is what opened the door right there with Andre, because I don't think anyone has approached him or Mike Mongo, okay, with this bridging this gap that we have with this advanced technology.
We're going to talk to him, you and I.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to send him an email. You're sending him an email. We're going to do a little conference.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be some further communications going on here.
Yeah, we're going to open some doors here with these people. We're going to send out each one of them. We're going to contact and let them know what we're doing.
But, you know, it's a great group of people that are forward-looking, okay? And that's what I was looking for at this conference. You know, people with a vision that's forward-looking.
But they didn't seem to know anything about what we were talking about.
Well, they had everything, but the steering wheel, okay, that's going to guide this group into the next century, okay, into an area of real space exploration. Because from there, now wait a minute. No, we can't wait.
No.
All right. We can't wait for this to happen, folks, okay, because Aurora Tech is the one who's going to bring this technology forward.
We're rolling it up.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what was missing in this group.
Us. That's it.
All right.
You got to tell them then.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got your group all together, but the one thing's missing is us.
Yeah. I mean, they have people here giving papers, right?
Right.
You know, like Glenn Robertson. He's an advanced propulsion engineer.
Mm-hmm.
You have people like Miguel Kubri.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's director of nuclear sciences. Okay. I mean, he's high up in the food chain, okay, for all these mainstreamers. But you see, there's this chasm, okay, between practical warp drive technology. Okay,
right.
There's a huge opportunity for us here. So you have people like Mike McGill, Richard Obese, warp drive warp drive physicist, right? But yet you need a something the size of a planet, okay, to produce negative energy. That's absurd. That's
so
complete.
Absurd.
And then you have Tiffany Frierson, you know, a brilliant physicist. Okay, she's listed here as an exotic propulsion physicist. But yet they're not producing the result that's necessary to get this group behind something.
What do they do? What do they really do?
Well, you're going to have to look up their bio, okay? Just look up their bio, folks. Because they're all listed here under this this organization, Icarus Interstellar. And Icarus, I-C-A-R-U-S, Interstellar.
What does Icarus mean?
Well, Icarus is a winged god that flies to the sun.
I knew there was some connection there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you look under the Starship Congress, you scroll down, and you see the whole lineup here.
Mm-hmm.
And these are brilliant people. I mean, don't by any means discount them.
It's just, I guess, when I was engaging them about what we were doing, they just thought I was making it up or something. I don't think they thought it was real.
Right. Okay, so you have this incredible lineup, but yet there's this chasm of opportunity that we can fill with Aurora Tech.
They got a huge sign
incredible.
Up on their website that says build a starship.
Yeah.
But they got nothing to build it with.
Right.
What are they going to do? The air
and they were getting criticism from the venture capital sector that there's nothing to fund here, but yet they have all this brilliance. Okay, behind a starship, but no engine. Okay,
nothing
to make it happen.
Nothing to power it.
Right, and you got to have power. You have to have energy.
You got power
to make this happen.
You got
to
have the power.
Yeah,
and we're the ones with the power.
And I think huge opportunity. I mean, the door's wide open for Aurora Tech.
It's like they prepared this all for us, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like they set the stage.
Exactly.
They got all called the actors. Now all we need is a huge audience.
So I left Andre on that note. We're the answer.
That we'll be in
touch
with them.
And then, of course, he told his very close friend there, Mike, who's the previous, and Mike got all excited. I mean, he really got all excited. He had to, like, practically jump over the gate, okay, to come over to me as I'm loading the stuff aboard the trailer, right? And is there anything that I can get you, Bill? Is there anything? We have T-shirts, you know, hats. And I said, you know what, Mike? I really like that coffee cup you guys have. It's a great coffee cup. I would love to have. And he went up there and got the
coffee cup and gave it to you.
And just gave it to me here. And he's got a big smile. And I turned to him. I said, Mike, you guys put on a great conference. You got great people. I loved it. All right. And I left it, you know, on that high note with them. And it's a huge opportunity.
It is. It's like they put this whole conference on just to meet you.
Yeah, exactly. And we had to be there.
Yes, we did.
So there you go, folks. There you go.
And I told you, I said, look at Bill, I know I'm not the one to open these doors here at this conference because, you know, my knowledge is limited on all the science and physics and everything that you easily rattle off.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but I know if I'm not... If you just loan it, go there alone every day and allow yourself to mix it.
And you were there. I mean, they were interested.